until Election Day. You need to get out and register to vote, people. Guess what? A new poll is out, too, showing the race for governor and the U.S. Senate here in Florida are both as tight as a tick. Just what you'd expect here in Florida. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9. Also, grab our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, the latest polling numbers from UNF. When we talk about the race for governor, who will get your vote? Andrew Gillum or Ron DeSantis? And what about the race for Senate? We want your calls about that, too. 549-2937 to join us. Then later, Movable Feast pays a visit to Moon Over the Market, a tasty fall tradition, plus a conversation with author and activist Khalil Osiris. All of that ahead this morning. But first, this hour today, Tuesday, September 25th, is National Voter Registration Day. Go to Google. There's a Google Doodle right there. And if you click on it, it'll take you to an online registration form for both Florida and Georgia. Make sure you register to vote. The deadline is coming up very soon. And of course, it is 6 weeks out from Election Day, as the two biggest races on the ballot in Florida continue to be very close. There is new polling data out this week from UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab, and it shows that Democrat Andrew Gillum holds a 5-point lead over Republican Ron DeSantis in Florida's race for governor. Meanwhile, the race for the U.S. Senate is a dead heat right now, with both incumbent Democrat Bill Nelson and Republican candidate Governor Rick Scott both at 45% support. Right tied up. Of course, there are other things you'll be voting on in November. Constitutional amendments, among other things. And one of the most watched amendments on the ballot is Amendment 4. That's the voting rights restoration for felons. That initiative seems to be well on its way to approval. UNF says more than 70% of those polled approve of that amendment. So 6 weeks out from Election Day, what is the state of play when it comes to these races? Always pleased to have Mike Binder with his thoughts on Florida politics. He's the faculty director of UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab, which commissioned this poll, and he is on the line now. Hi, Mike. Good to have you.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me on this morning.
And here's our question to callers. Who will get your vote for governor? Who will get your vote for U.S. Senate? We are talking about the race for governor between Andrew Gillum and Ron DeSantis. Gillum's leading in that poll. And when it comes to the race for Senate, Bill Nelson and Rick Scott are tied. We particularly want to hear from NPAs, no party affiliated voters, because you are the ones that will decide these races. Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or weigh in on our Facebook page. Okay, Mike, let's begin with the race at the top of the ticket. Your poll shows that Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum has about a 5-point lead over outgoing Republican Congressman Ron DeSantis. Tell us a little bit more about those numbers.
Yeah, so we have it at about 4 points, 47-43, and about 10% of the folks are undecided. So there's plenty of room for this thing to move as we work closer to Election Day. The one thing that I find really intriguing about this race and how some of the votes are breaking down is there's so much certainty about their vote choices. I know 10% seems like a fair amount of people that don't know, but think about these candidates. You know, 3 months ago, nobody knew who Andrew Gillum was, and Ron DeSantis never had the type of name recognition that a Rick Scott or a Bill Nelson has. So I think the fact that so many folks have kind of pitched into one camp or the other already really highlights what you just mentioned, the role that voter turnout is going to play in this election and getting to the polls.
Right. Which party can turn their base out? And as your data shows as well, Mike, partisan Democrats are going with DeSantis, going with Gillum. Partisan Republicans will, of course, support DeSantis. It's that third of voters in Florida, though, that tend to decide elections. Fully one-third of Florida residents are not affiliated with a party. And so where are they falling on the governor's race, and are they movable?
Well, those folks tend to be the most movable, and right now Gillum has about a 13-point lead amongst the NPA and other party group. But there's almost 20% that aren't sure where they're going to vote or who they're going to vote for. The trick with these guys is getting them to the polls. They tend to turn out in much lower rates, even in presidential elections, but in these midterm elections, much lower rates. You know, maybe they'll be 20% of the electorate at best, when they are, as you just mentioned, a third of the electorate. So getting them out to the polls is going to be the trick if Gillum really wants to win this race.
And it's 549-2937 to join us. We'll go to your calls in a moment as we talk about UNF's latest poll on the governor's race and the upcoming U.S. Senate race. Your polling shows, Mike, that Bill Nelson and Rick Scott are tied at 45% apiece. There is really not a lot of room for error for either one of these candidates. How do you see that race shaking out over the next 6 weeks?
I see this race kind of, I think, how most people have seen this race shaping up for the past year. You're going to see a lot of negative ads, and this is going to be one of those 51-49 type of races come election day. And whichever candidate can, again, get their base out, get their voters out, and maybe make a little bit of inroads with those NPAs, what role does Donald Trump play in this race? Same thing for DeSantis. Does he help him like he helped DeSantis? Does he help Rick Scott? That the two of them have had close ties? Or do Democrats get mobilized because of their disdain for Trump and are particularly independents? How do they feel about this? And how does that play out? And getting those voters out is going to be vital for both camps.
It really is extraordinary the degree to which President Trump's presence, omnipresence really, in our political world right now will affect these races, Mike, and whatever is happening in the news cycle 6 weeks from now could make that difference in that point or two you're talking about. That is a big factor.
Now, it's a huge factor. And 6 weeks from now, nothing. I mean, anything that Trump can do 6 hours from now can change. So certainly right. That matters. But the immediacy of it, because of who Donald Trump is and the attention he garners, we have to think back to 2010 and when Barack Obama was in his first term. Barack Obama's influence on the 2010 midterms was monumental. The rise of the Tea Party, the Republican taking control of Congress, all of that was because of Barack Obama. So this isn't unprecedented that the president plays an overarching role during midterm elections. It's just that it's Donald Trump and everything gets magnified.
One other thing you polled Floridians about, there is a lot of support for restoring felon voting rights in Florida. This is Amendment 4. 71% of likely voters said they would vote yes on this. That shows a trending toward the more progressive position among the electorate on this issue. Currently, felons in Florida have to fight to restore their voting rights. It's a long and cumbersome process. So how are you interpreting some of the data there?
Well, what's interesting is, and you know, we all know in Florida, for ballot measures to pass, you have to get over 60%. This isn't just a simple majority. So there is a high bar to reach. But all of the partisans, Democrats are at 83%, Republicans are even at 62%, and then the NPAs, they're at 66%. So across all of the partisan groups, there's large amounts of support for this issue. And I think that really tends to say this thing is probably going to pass. And I think it's more of a sense of, well, you know, somebody served their time, they should have the right to vote. That type of mindset is what's behind it.
The UNF poll also shows that Floridians rate education as the most important problem in the state, followed closely by health care and the environment. We'll talk about that, too. But right now, let's take a few of your calls. Who will get your vote for governor, for U.S. senator? What are your thoughts about the midterm elections just 6 weeks away? By the way, today is National Voter Registration Day, a reminder to get out and register to vote. You can do it just by clicking on the Google Doodle that's at google.com today, and it will take you directly to the link that will tell you how to register. 549-2937 to join us. Mark is in St. Augustine. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I had a question. Number one, I guess I'm supporting Rick Scott and Ron DeSantis, but I had a question about the methodology of the polling. It seems over the past several years with, you know, the advent of cell phones, we don't even have a home line in our house anymore. We have cell phones. We've never once been contacted by a polling outfit. And given, say, for example, back in the previous presidential election, all the polls had Hillary winning, yet Trump won decisively. And I'm just kind of curious how your methodology is done, or what is your methodology to ensure that you do have a fair sampling of individuals in your poll?
Yeah, thanks for those questions, Mike.
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk about that. And one thing just to let the caller know is that we, two-thirds of these respondents were on cell phones. We are not simply just calling landlines. The majority of the people we talk to are on cell phones. So one thing the caller mentioned, the 2016 election, and there were two things that we learned in the 2016 election and pollsters have implemented since then. One is the national vote does not necessarily fall down the same way that the Electoral College does. And Hillary Clinton won by about 2.5% in the overall vote. So national polls that typically on average had her up by 3 points were pretty darn close. The problem was some of those other states. The other thing that we learned in 2016, which was new and had never really been an issue before, was the degree to which education correlated with vote choice. Typically, when we're running surveys, we tend to get a higher amount of folks with more education. It was never an issue in the past, but because education mattered so much in the vote choice in 2016, it changed a lot of numbers. Our last poll in 2016 came out, we had Hillary Clinton +2. By adding education as a weight and controlling for that, we would have had Trump by winning by 0.5 point. So our polling numbers were really good. We just didn't know how to manage the education weight. We take care of that now. We instruct that. We put that into our methodology. So we are calling people all across the state. We're getting them on cell phones. We have stratification based on media market, so we're not just getting all the people in Northeast Florida or the Panhandle. We're getting people from Miami, from Orlando. So that's how we get our folks. And remember, we've talked to 600 people. There's 13 million registered voters in the state of Florida. So the likelihood of getting called is pretty small.
Okay. And it was extraordinary to see in the primary how Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum turned out voters that don't vote frequently. He expanded the voting pie with his campaign. My question to you, can he do it again in November? And will the FBI investigation involving city government in Tallahassee play a role in perhaps slowing his mo at all? On the other hand, Ron DeSantis recently distanced himself somewhat from President Trump over inaccurate and offensive tweets the president made about hurricane deaths in Puerto Rico. DeSantis is walking a very thin line as well in terms of how closely he wants to tie himself to President Trump. Can DeSantis go beyond his base? And what's his strategy to do that as well?
I think both candidates face a similar challenge. They're both very successful in reaching their party bases in the primary, and that propelled them to victory. And much like many elections, when the primary is over, you have to work your way to the middle to get those NPAs, to get those moderate candidates in your party. Republicans across the country are facing the Trump problem now, and they're dealing with it in different ways. DeSantis has kind of stepped away. You haven't seen Trump endorsing or talking about DeSantis much, aside from that little kerfuffle with Puerto Rico. He's not planning to come down here and give any rallies. Gillum, on the other side, he's obviously didn't deal with the investigation during his primary as much as he could have because he wasn't the front runner. But does that come out now? And you're beginning to see it a little bit, how he handles those questions, how the media portrays it, how his supporters think about it. All that's going to come into play in the next few weeks. And the thing with Florida is our general election cycle is pretty condensed. Our primary is, less than a few weeks old. So all this stuff gets accelerated, and it's going to be a very expensive campaign, and we're going to be seeing a lot of these folks on TV over the next couple of weeks.
We're talking now with Mike Binder. He runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab. They have a new poll out this week looking at Florida's governor's race, Senate race, and a few other issues. Give us a call, 549-2937, especially if you're not affiliated with either major party. We want to hear from you. Who you will be voting for in November. 549-2937. Shana is in Fleming Island. Hi, Shana. Good morning.
Shauna.
Okay.
Yep. Usually you see me on Twitter.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. I was the chairman of the former Independence Party of Florida. I'm definitely voting for Bill Nelson and Andrew Gillum. One of the things I can definitely give as a perspective that has an impact on the Bill Nelson vote over Rick Scott is Rick Scott has been very hostile to third parties. His administration has. Relatively recently, within this past year, you may have noticed that about a fifth of the population, voting population of Florida, recently got moved to NPA because the Independent Party finally succumbed to the same tactics that our party did. Basically, just extra hurdles for a third party and minor party administratively, basically a lot of extra hoops and stuff to go through just to keep the parties going that aren't as difficult for the big two parties, since they are they're basically professional politicians. Third parties usually have a lot more volunteer work. There's people who, this isn't their primary job. They're just trying to make a difference. And Rick Scott's administration has put up all sorts of right on the borderline interpretational hurdles. Do you need a CPA versus a regular public accountant to do your annual audits? Little things that aren't actually written explicitly.
So that's what's motivating your vote then? That's what's motivating?
Oh, no. Actually, that's just one piece of it.
That's just one piece.
Bill Nelson walks his talk. Bill Nelson has actually been on the front lines of any of the disasters that occur. He's gone onto the floor of the Senate to actually bring up those issues that his constituents have been asking for. Right now, Rick Scott relies on the fact that he pumps a lot of money into his campaigns. That's what he did when we went up against him for governorship. He had, when he won his governorship, he actually had about $27 per vote that he got. He had put in. His Democratic opponent put in $7 per vote, okay. And our candidate ended up with about 18 cents per vote that he got.
All right. So I appreciate that, Shauna, as an independent voter. Thanks for sharing all that with us. And everyone
else. And with Andrew Gillum also, with him, it's a similar thing. He actually has actual actions he's going. He has goals he's going for. He has actually been
his
listening
platform.
To the public.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah,
and I'm going to ask Mike about that. Gillum has laid out a full spectrum progressive platform for Florida. He is calling for teachers to be paid a professional wage, $50,000 a year. He is calling for the minimum wage to be raised. He's calling for reform of ICE, which is popular among progressive voters. He wants Medicare for all. These are all progressive positions. Mike, he is the first major party candidate in this state's modern history to run on such a progressive platform. And so, it's interesting to hear from an independent voter on this, like Shauna. Gillum, at least right now, is winning over NPA voters with this platform and really has kind of defied conventional wisdom among Democrats who didn't think that going that far to the progressive side could be a winning strategy. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think two things. One, nobody's won any elections just yet. And that's important to keep in mind. A lot can happen in the next 6.5 weeks. So he hasn't won just yet. Second, the idea that all these things are going to be implemented if he were to win immediately is a little bit of a stretch. There's nobody that thinks the Republicans are going to lose control of both houses in the state legislature. So he's going to have some hurdles there. But additionally, a lot of these issues that he's talking about, if you poll on them individually, they do pretty well in and of themselves. So it's not like he's out there talking about issues that a large majority of Floridians are opposed to. Now, if you put them all together and then you finish up that sentence with, it's going to cost X amount of dollars and X amount of dollars in tax increases, obviously support begins to come down for those things. But speaking about those issues in and of themselves, when education is such an important issue for Florida, you want to pay teachers, makes a lot of sense. Healthcare is an important issue in Florida, especially with our older population. And in Florida, we have a great many folks that are at that Medicaid level. That's an important issue for a lot of voters. So certainly the prospect of getting access to healthcare is an attractive option. So it's not like he's talking about bad issues or issues that a lot of people don't like. They're just potentially expensive. And for folks on the left that are very excited about all this stuff happening in early January, if he gets elected, I'd urge caution in your optimism.
Right. And on the other side of the ledger, how is the strategy of Ron DeSantis calling Gillum's policy positions socialism going to fly or not fly with this general election pool of voters?
Well, certainly, if you're on the right and in these midterm elections, the folks that tend to turn out the most tend to be the older folks, and they are by and large Republicans in Florida. And this is something that is a touch tone. It's like liberal of the 80s and 90s. You know, it's not a word you want to use. So certainly socialism is going to scare those folks into a DeSantis vote. They're already predisposed to vote for DeSantis already. This just hardens their position a little bit. The role that DeSantis is going to play is talking about the potential cost of all this. That's the stuff that can get into the NPA voters and maybe some moderate Democrats that might not be wanting to see their taxes increased. That's where DeSantis is going to make his pitch to the moderates.
All right, let's go to Carl in St. Augustine. Hi, Carl. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. I am not an astute political observer, but I'm looking for candidates this day and time that have character and a heart and a soul, who have a vision for our future that will protect our environment, protect our society, improve education. And that makes it a real simple choice for me.
And your choice is?
Andrew Gillum.
All right, Carl, thanks for that. Here are a few comments for you, Mike, on our Facebook page. Tim writes, I'm a liberal-leaning NPA voter. I am voting for both Democrats. They are the lesser of two evils. I do not support corporatist sellouts. Red Tide Rick, Medicare felon, he's referring to Governor Scott, needs to just go away. Now, you mentioned that your poll shows the environment is a big priority for Florida voters. Is that going to harm Governor Scott or Bill Nelson, by the way, who is being accused of not doing enough in the U.S. Senate to keep Florida's waters pristine? How is that environmental issue going to play in the Senate race? Because those candidates, Rick Scott and Bill Nelson, are really finger pointing at each other over this. Although in the final analysis, the governor of the state has, I think most voters probably would agree, slightly more responsibility. But what about the environment?
Yeah, the environment's an important issue, even amongst Republicans. It's kind of a top two-ish issue with immigration leading the way, but healthcare, education, the environment are all have about the same level of importance amongst Republicans. And if you think about the West Coast, and particularly a lot of those retirement communities out there, what's happening out there to that water and how that's going to potentially impact the tourism dollars that come into those communities is really important. And if you look at a couple of the counties out there on the Republican primary, Rick Scott's challenger was oftentimes getting some very large numbers. And that is potentially a problem for him if he's unable to convince voters that this is Bill Nelson's fault. And the governor for the last 8 years is doing a pretty good job of trying to convince voters of that. If he's unable to do that, I think that that's one issue that could really come back to haunt him, especially among some folks that would traditionally be some of his strongest supporters.
Always good to talk to you. By the way, we're getting a lot of tweets about taking issue with you about Donald Trump being a decisive victor because he lost the popular vote by over 3 million votes. You can take it up with them on that another time. Mike Bender, always good to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Melissa.
He's Mike Bender, and he runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab. More about those poll numbers on our website as well at wjct.org. Much more still ahead later. Author and activist Khalil Osiris joins us. But up next, how you can ring in the fall season with Moon Over the Market. That's in our Movable Feast. We'll be right back.
WJCT's Fall Membership Drive is on right now, but this is not business as usual. We only have a few more days to reach our $60,000 goal. Donate today and support public media the way you like it, quickly, quietly, and without program interruptions. Help us minimize our on-air pledge drives. Make your gift count today. Whether you're renewing your support or making a donation for the very first time, do it at wjct.org/radio. Thanks.
I'm Stephen Dubner, host of Freakonomics Radio. Every week, Freakonomics Radio explores the hidden side of everything, from what our Google searches reveal about us, to whether the American dream is still alive, to whether rich people are really more selfish than poor people. I hope you'll join me Sunday at 1 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's becoming a fun and tasty fall tradition here on the First Coast. In today's Movable Feast, our look at dining and entertainment trends around town, Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance talks with the talents behind Moon Over the Market.
Have a banana, Hannah.
So welcome to Movable Feast. I am so excited because there is a great October event coming up in Jacksonville, the third year for Moon Over the Market. And this morning we have Erin Thursby, the executive director.
Hi.
And Nicole Chapman, who is with the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. And you have a role with the big event coming up in October. What is Moon Over the Market?
Well, Moon Over the Market is a great fall tasting event, and it's also a way for students and culinary programs to kind of get out there and have people taste what they have to offer. It's one of the best deals out there for a fall tasting event. A great community event, and it highlights the Jacksonville Farmers Market.
Okay, that was my next question. Location, where is Moon Over the Market held, and has it always been at the Farmers Market?
It has. A lot of people have forgotten about this wonderful farmers market that we've had for years and years and years.
Geographically, Erin, where is it in Jacksonville?
It's in the Rail Yard District.
The Rail Yard District.
Right.
And give us some cross streets for people to picture
it. It's over off Beaver Street, so right outside of downtown. Located on Beaver Street, it is open 364 days a year, dawn to dusk, closed on Christmas Day.
And, you know, it's quite inspiring when you go there. You're not expecting it. But Beaver Street is a culinary destination and has been probably for 100 years in Jacksonville. I know that there are the fisheries and there are other distribution companies that are there. So how do you utilize the space at the farmers market for Moon Over the Market?
Well, it's really different if you've been there during the day. It's really different. We jazz it up a bit. We dress it up a bit. We put some sparkly lights and we just have the food vendors out there. And some of the farmers at the farmers market will actually stay open a little bit later. And a lot of them cook their food there, too. So besides the samples that you'll get from the restaurants, you'll probably also get to taste a little bit of what the farmers have to offer because they take their produce and they cook as well.
I think that's the exciting thing. You're blending the reality of the farmers who have their stands there and the culinary experience with restaurants. Tell me, who are some of the vendors this year? What are some of the tastes they're going to have?
Well, we've got Bellwether, which everybody really, really loves.
That's a restaurant.
That's a restaurant. Mm-hmm. We have Blue Bamboo, this hip Asian comfort food. Jamma's Jacks is a food truck. Rummies and Yummies, really good rum cake. Mm-hmm. A lot of different flavors. They're fantastic.
I remember seeing them last
year.
Yeah.
Pie 95, oh man, he's fantastic. Wood-fired oven. It's a food truck, but some of the best pizza you can have out of a wood-fired truck.
Good. So that's great. So there are the farmers and their stands. There's restaurants and tastings and food trucks. And then there's a piece of
Absolutely.
This event.
The Florida Restaurant Lodging Association is very excited to take part in this, where we are having more of like a Top Chef competition. So we have five teams of two students each, and then we partner with Gastro Jacks to find mentors, chef mentors for these teams. So we pair the students with a chef mentor. The chef mentor helps them create their dish, and they have to buy all their ingredients at the farmer's market. They do that, and then they create 75 tastes for everyone at the event to enjoy. Included with your ticket, you'll get one voting taste. So the fun part of this is all proceeds that we do from the event go back directly to the schools.
And there's complimentary parking, as I remember from last year, so it's easy
Parking's
access.
Great. Yeah,
it's easy access for sure.
And a lovely evening event here in Jacksonville. And how can people find you?
904tix.com. If you go on 904tix, you just enter in Moon Over the Market in your search box and you'll find it.
And the date is?
October 11th.
Thursday evening, right? Yeah. To kick off your weekend.
I can't wait to see you there and escort our food judges coming from the Women's
you,
Food Alliance this year. So thank you very much, Erin, Nicole. We will see you at Moon Over the Market in Jacksonville, October 11th.
When they come to mind.
Again, that's Thursday, October 11th at the Jacksonville Farmers Market. We'll be right back.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue and catering.
Many listeners say WJCT is one of the things they love about living in our region. They appreciate that we separate fact from fiction. If you feel that way too, ensure we'll always be a part of the place you love. Every gift gets us closer to our goal of $60,000. And when you become a sustainer, you get WJCT socks. Check them out at wjct.org/radio.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9, your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, a quick programming note. We are so excited about this here at the station, and we want everybody to join us and come on out this Friday, September 28th, to WJCT's first ever block party in Five Points. Yeah, we are saying goodbye to summer and hello to fall in one of this city's most vibrant neighborhoods. Things will kick off at 9 a.m. with a live broadcast of this show coming to you live from Derby on Park in the heart of Five Points. Then the party will continue all through the day in the neighborhood and into the night with a live broadcast of Electro Lounge coming to you live from Five Points. Now, the big block party on Friday in Five Points is free. Some vendors, though, are chipping in with sales from the day, benefiting WJCT. So if you come to the party and spend some money in Five Points, you are helping public radio. There will also be a special VIP reception where you can watch First Coast Connect in person, then have breakfast with me and show producer, the unimpeachable Kevin Murchart. Those $50 tickets are available online at wjct.org/events. Special thanks to our lead sponsors, Bread and Board and Derby on Park. So come by Five Points this Friday for goodbye to summer, hello to fall. It's our big block party supporting public radio on the First Coast. If you come at night, you can hang out with our own station manager and music director, David Luckin, for a live broadcast of his beloved Electro Lounge. So much happening Friday in Five Points. Everybody mark your calendar and come on out and join us there. Well, author, educator, and activist Khalil Osiris is an internationally renowned speaker on restorative justice and leadership. Osiris spent 20 years of his life in prison. He earned his bachelor's and his master's degrees from Boston University while he was incarcerated. Then he transformed his life and emerged from prison with a deep understanding of how to use personal crisis and challenges and turn them into opportunities for self-improvement. Khalil Osiris is the author of the book, A Freedom That Comes From Within. While he was in prison, he realized that he had been incarcerated actually long before he was arrested. His epiphany was that he could get out before he was released. His book invites readers to find their freedom, regardless of how powerless they perceive themselves to be. Khalil Osiris speaks Sunday in downtown Jacksonville at St. John's Cathedral. He joins us now with a preview. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you on the show. It's 549-2937 to connect with author and activist Khalil Osiris. And so many amazing accomplishments in your life. You speak all over the world. You have written books. You also have written curriculum for schools and prisons. You even host a show in South Africa that has won awards. You've done so many amazing things, but it all started for you when you were incarcerated, it sounds like, and you decided to educate yourself while incarcerated. Can you take us back to that point in your life?
Yes. Well, typically you hear the story of people who have been incarcerated for a number of years, and there's always some sense that they had a really horrible upbringing, broken home, drug-addicted parents, all of those kinds of stories that are part of the common narrative. My history is a bit different. I actually had great parents, had an opportunity to get a quality education early on in my life, but I made some horrible choices. And I remember by the age of 17, having been politicized in the context of the Black Panther Party for self-defense and growing up in an era on the heels of the civil rights movement, I found myself a very angry and frustrated young man. So at 17, I committed a robbery and ended up being convicted as an adult, adjudicated as an adult and sent to prison. It was June 1976.
20 years?
I served 5 years on my first sentence.
Okay.
So I went to prison twice. And you hear the stories of people who go to prison, get out, and you wonder, why do they go back?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in my case, when I went to prison for those 5 years, basically I ended up becoming worse. I grew more angry during the incarceration, was stabbed during that sentence, and just came out a very angry young man at 22. And it was actually quite predictable that I would go back to crime. So
right.
I ended up back in prison.
Back in prison. And that recidivism rate is so high in this country because we don't do a good job of actually helping people when they leave incarceration. They're basically thrown to the wolves and they often reoffend.
That's why I bring it up, because it's really important to understand why so many people go back. I was faced with an opportunity to turn my life around and instead made more poor choices. So at the age of 25, I was faced with 15 to 75 years. A judge who looked at me and said, I could have been there as a defense attorney. I could have been there as a prosecutor representing the citizens of the great state of Ohio, where I was convicted at the time. He said, but I chose to be a criminal, and therefore his only regret is that he couldn't give me more time. But 15 to 75 years when you're 25 years old, it was a life sentence. And I looked at my life and I just realized that's not how I expected it to end up. And so I realized also that I had to make some new choices, some better choices, even though I was on my way back to prison. And it was in that moment that I had an epiphany about the fact that I actually had been in prison quite a number of years prior to my arrest and incarceration. And that had to do with the fact that my incarceration wasn't based on the cell or the prison, but on my own thoughts, my own values, the choices that I had been making that were self-defeating mm-hmm. and self-limiting. And so it was during that time that I wrote the draft for my first book called The Psychology of Incarceration. And the premise is very simple, Melissa. Prison is a metaphor for self-imposed limitations. And think about that. The majority of people who are in prison actually will never see the inside of a jail because we engage in socially sanctioned, self-imposed limitations. Mm-hmm. I can walk into a room and think that I'm superior for no other reason than the color of my skin or the zip code that I reside in. And I'm not talking about necessarily black and white. I'm saying that you can be a light-skinned African-American and have great challenges around a dark-skinned African-American. You can be a blonde-haired woman, and when your hair starts to turn, go to every kind of dye that you can imagine to avoid looking like a brunette. So my point is that self-imposed limitations are the source of our imprisonment, and I know them well.
And not only did you walk this path, you and not only did you start becoming an author in prison, you educated yourself in prison. You went to Boston University from behind bars, earning both an undergraduate and a master's degree.
Yeah, because what I looked at was during my incarceration, I had to make choices around what could I do that would be most beneficial to me, not just while I was in prison, but once released. And so I ended up in Norfolk Prison Colony in Massachusetts. It's the same prison that Malcolm X had served time.
Wow.
And attending Boston University is where Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. earned his doctorate degree. But during that time, I became pen pals with Makaziwe Mandela, the eldest daughter of Nelson Mandela, and ultimately wrote Nelson Mandela and became a pen pal with him, making a promise to him in 1987 while he was at Poolsmore Prison and I was at Norfolk Correctional Institution that once released and successful in America, I would come to South Africa and work in schools and prisons to honor the impact, the life-changing impact that he had with me and many of my colleagues in prison.
Amazing. Of course, he went on to become one of the world's transformational figures, and you went on to do exactly that.
Exactly the work that I made a commitment to from the bottom of life in a prison cell. And that was 25 years later that I ultimately got to South Africa. But, you know, along the way, while in prison, I had two core principles that guided me. One, I would say to guys in prison, don't break the rules. And the irony is that many times I'd be challenged around, how can you say that when you've been one of the biggest rule breakers? And I say, well, we don't break the rules because when you unpack what the rules are, it's number one, don't rape anyone, don't kill anyone, don't stab anyone. If you're not capable of recognizing your human dignity to the point that you see those rules are beneath your humanity, then something's really wrong, and we need to work on that rather than the rules. And secondly, turn the cell into a classroom and the prison into a university.
And you lived that.
Yes, absolutely.
We are going to take your calls right after a quick break for author and activist and life coach and speaker Khalil Osiris. He will be speaking Sunday and doing a book signing at St. John's Cathedral in downtown Jacksonville. But in a moment, we're going to talk a little bit more about his book, A Freedom That Comes From Within, and get your calls as we talk about the school-to-prison pipeline, restoring felon voting rights in Florida, that's on the ballot this fall, and more. It's 549-2937 to join us. A quick break, and we'll be right back.
Have you ever donated to WJCT? If you have, you know you can hear and see your dollars in action every time you tune in or read a story on WJCT.org. If you've never given, it's time. Your generosity today makes WJCT possible for everyone in our community tomorrow, especially for those who are unable to give. Donate today at WJCT.org/radio, and thanks.
Thanks. on the next Fresh Air. Songwriter and singer Robbie Foulkes and singer and pianist Linda Gail Lewis, the younger sister of Jerry Lee Lewis. They'll perform in our studio. Their new album is called Wild, Wild, Wild. Back in the day, I'm proud to say we was wild, wild, wild. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Dateline, the American economy, present day.
Tell me the good news or tell me the bad news, but let me know what it is so I can react.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. The import business tries to figure out the trade war. We'll have that story for you the rest of the day's business news and the numbers from Wall Street, of course, next time on Marketplace.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
The world's largest ball of twine, the Jimmy Carter peanut statue, and a Stonehenge replica called Carhenge. Must-see attractions in Kansas, Georgia, and Nebraska. Pull over on many of the nation's highways and you'll find a mix of the weird and the wonderful. Celebrating America's roadside attractions. Next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
We're back with author and activist and speaker Khalil Osiris, who calls Jacksonville home now, by the way, after quite a bit of time overseas. Okay, so you will be speaking and doing a book signing, as I mentioned, Sunday at St. John's Cathedral in downtown Jacksonville. Issues involving felon rights have really risen to the forefront in Florida, just as you move back to the United States. What are your thoughts about that, particularly in November? Florida voters will be asked to vote up or down Amendment 4. It would automatically restore voting rights for those who've been incarcerated. More than 70% of those polled, as we talked about at the beginning of today's show, say they're going to vote yes. They think that the law limiting felon rights is wrong. They want to change that.
Well, I think it's critical for us to participate in our democracy. And when you exclude people from the opportunity to do that, then what happens is you say that they don't matter. Their voices don't matter. And for me, felony reenfranchisement is a critical criminal justice issue that I think is one of the issues that all of us need to have a view about and participate in making sure that we make that opportunity available. Now, I will also say that when you look at the issue, many times what's not told in the statistics, what's not revealed in the statistics is that many of the people whose rights have been taken as a consequence of their felony conviction never voted in the first place. So it's not just about passing a law that reenfranchises them. We also need to make sure that we do a robust educational campaign to say why the vote is important and to expect that there will be really serious participation at the community level.
Let's go to Nancy in Fleming Island. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Osiris. I'm so excited that you're here in Jacksonville.
Thank you so much.
Just exciting to hear. And I just had a couple quick questions for you. Could you tell me again where you'll be speaking on Sunday and what time?
St. John's. Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. St. John's.
St. John's Cathedral on Church Street. At 11 o'clock.
Okay.
And what was your other question?
And my other question is, I was just wondering if you could expand a little bit on the curriculum that could be used within our schools.
Sure.
Yes.
You have designed curriculum for both schools and prisons designed to break the school-to-prison pipeline, which is a huge issue in this country. How does that curriculum work?
Yeah, well, on the educational side, it's what we call prevention work. And basically, it's based on positive behavioral interventions and supports. We look at how do we begin to help students, all students, succeed in making great choices and engaging in pro-social behavior. On the side of prisons, what we look at is how to do interventions, recognizing that many times prisoners are parents. And we don't often recognize the extent to which research shows that the next generation of prisoners are typically going to be taken from the group of children who are the offspring of those who are already incarcerated. So when we do the work in schools, many times when we go particularly to urban schools or urban communities, we see a really high instance of children who have incarcerated family members. And so the school to prison pipeline, in order to break that, we have to go into those schools and address that issue of what kinds of choices young people are making and how do those choices fit into a normalized kind of antisocial attitude, value, and belief system.
Doran on the West Side. Doran, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. I wanted to ask a very quick, two quick questions. One, I'm wondering how your guest chose to locate in Jacksonville. It sounds like he could have lived anywhere in the world, and I'm curious about that choice. And secondarily, I'm curious about his thoughts about how African-American males are socialized in negative ways and how that helps to amplify the problems that everybody has
right.
in terms of counterproductive behavior.
Yeah, okay. great questions. You. And just a little bit of time left. Let's answer those quickly.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I was invited by two dear friends here in Jacksonville, Michael and Pam Oates, who just had me come and do a presentation with their, with some friends of theirs, and it worked out really well. And I chose to move here because it's a great city, number one. Secondly, in terms of African Americans, particularly males, what happens is that in order to understand our behavior as an African American male, the main thing that I say is we've accepted or internalized normalized antisocial values and ideation, thinking. And what has to happen is not just looking at the individual African-American males, but look at the cultural context in which our thinking and our behavior emerges. So we're not just talking about changing behavior. We're talking about addressing the need for cultural change.
And that is just a small taste of what you can experience if you come out to see Khalil this Sunday during the 11 a.m. service at St. John's Cathedral, that historic cathedral on Church Street in downtown Jacksonville, a speech and then a book signing. Khalil's book is called A Freedom That Comes From Within. Author, activist, and speaker Khalil Osiris. It is Osiris, isn't it?
Yes.
It's such a pleasure to have you on the show and to have you in Jacksonville. So welcome to Jacksonville.
Thank you so much, Melissa. I'm honored to be here.
And again, that's Sunday at St. John's Cathedral at 11 a.m. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board. Our theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross. This is 89.9. We'll be back again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.